Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson, Armin Badakian, and CampiL.ca's James Grossi with us today. James, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm pretty excited to make my my podcastorial debut here with you guys today.
You knew about the cat. You knew about the ferns.
It was awesome to meet the cat. It's good to see the ferns are flourishing. It's a nice summery day for them. You know, I'll get a couple more in. So I'm excited
to
be here.
It's so hot here right now. My God.
Brilliant. So do you want to talk about something other than the weather, or should we get into
That's how I start all conversations. But yeah, we can move on. Yeah.
Lovely. So this is a pretty important week for Canadian soccer. James, I know you were just coming back from Downsview Park, where Toronto FC does their training. It's the Canadian Championship Finals on Wednesday night at BMO Field. Contractually obligated to tell you that it is available on OneSoccer. I'm just kidding. It's available on OneSoccer. And Montreal's going into it with a 1-0 lead. From their Ignacio Piatti screamer.
Screamer indeed, yes.
In that first leg at Stade Saputo. So before we get into that, though, I mean, let's talk a little bit about this tournament. We've covered it for the last 6 months on CampiL.ca, back when, you know, League One Ontario teams were taking on CPL teams, PLSQ was involved.
CPL teams playing their, like, third ever game.
Yeah.
Also.
So we saw some CPL teams take each other on. And now, as we've come to this climactic finish, another 401 derby, James, you and I have covered a lot of these tournaments, actually. What's it been like to see this expanded format from the eyes of a journalist?
It's been fascinating, and I think the knock that was always against this tournament was that it was confined very much to the three MLS markets and the USL markets, or the NASL markets, in Ottawa and Edmonton as the years went by. And to see it finally become a competition that's more or less coast-to-coast, granted Canada's a huge country and we need some more northern teams, I suppose, to make it a proper coast-to-coast-to-coast situation. But to see it sort of flourish, and this has always been a tournament that's had a pretty big spot in my heart. Those Wednesday nights, watching those games, there have been some epic moments over the years. Like, I'll always remember the first year this competition was there. It was just the round robin with the three teams and the points. Points ended up determining it, and then you had the miracle in Montreal, and then you had
those pink Montreal kits. Yeah. Like, it's all coming back to me.
Oh, yeah. Pablo Vitti. Yeah, good times.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, Vancouver never winning one for the longest time, and then finally winning one. It's always been – it's always had a bit of a soft spot in the soccer mythos here in our country. And so to see it expand its footprint and get more people across the country, get more towns and cities involved in it, has just been wonderful to see this year.
I think when I was watching Calgary take on Vancouver at Spruce Meadows, it really hit me, like, this is legit. And more than that, it's being embraced in the right way. You know, this is like one of the US Open Cup for me has always had this feel of like being a distraction in a sense to the MLS action that was being played. But that being said, it allows teams from all across the United States, multiple different levels. So there is a beauty to it. But then it always ends up being like a bunch of MLS teams playing against each other. This really had the feel of a proper like domestic tournament. Mm-hmm. It felt like the FA Cup, where smaller teams were taking on these massive giants with established history and massive grounds. And it's like, yeah, well, you know what? On your day, anyone can beat anybody. And that's exactly what happened at BC Place.
You saw that. I was at York Montreal when the Impact came to York Lions Stadium there. And the place was bumping. And
that was a great game, too.
Yeah, it was a fascinating game. You know, Montreal were there for the taking as far as I was concerned. And you really felt that genuine excitement. Like, I've been lucky enough to be over at an FA Cup match over in England before. And, you know, just, I was riding a bus to some little tiny town outside of London. And you could feel as you got closer to the ground, that excitement building and that sort of what it meant to that little group. And you know, York, there was definitely that vibe as you approached that stadium, that something big was happening there.
I think the two of you were at TFC training when Michael Bradley was talking about wanting to play in Halifax.
Yep.
I thought those quotes were so interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. He said that it was one of the as they were watching Halifax take on the Ottawa Fury, they were secretly gunning for the Wanderers because they wanted to go to Wanderers ground and play a game. Can you blame them, though? I think everybody in the CPL said that was their away destination of choice. There's just a charm to that place. Mm-hmm. And also because we've never had sports in that region. Not just soccer, just like sports in general. So the fact that there is something meaningful there and it's caught on in such a good way and we've expressed it through the Canadian Championship, it's a really a beautiful story to come and actually experience. All that being said, on Wednesday, everything wraps up at BMO Field. It seems to always wrap up at BMO Field. But
why is that?
Yeah.
Oh, because Toronto's always in it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, we have seen every permutation of the three MLS teams fight it out in the finals.
Of course.
Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, Montreal. And ultimately, it's come down to these two rivals once again. Montreal comes into this one with a 1-0 lead. Toronto FC, I'm sure they're feeling confident in training. You were just up there. But it's not really the story of Toronto versus Montreal this time, is it? It feels more like the story of the entire journey, this battle for the North, as Canada Soccer has dubbed it. And I think that's really the big storyline that's emerged from this. It's okay, this year has ended Toronto-Montreal, and I'm sure on Wednesday we'll have another fascinating encounter between these two teams. But I think 2019's Canadian Championship will be remembered as the year that, you know, Cavalry defeated the Whitecaps, or that HFX took on the Ottawa Fury, or York 9 versus Montreal Impact, like these other storylines in the build-up to it. And frankly, I'm so excited for next year's version of this tournament. As these teams become more established and more capable and ready to really do battle, I mean, I think if you're FC Edmonton or you're Valor FC or you're, you know, even Forge, like you're really licking your chops at this point. Like, they missed out this year.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and if you look at how early it came, like it sort of teams hadn't had a chance to really figure themselves out
by the time
that first round came around. And now, you know, we're gonna wrap up this year's edition on Wednesday night, and next year, what is it, May? Everyone's gonna have that date circled on their calendar of like, we want to know who we're gonna play, we want to know what our path to the final is, and everyone will be looking forward to it.
I really want that like May, sort of like that like three matches in season thing to be solidified, because I just think it was so interesting to see York 9 like drive up to Montreal, out of the Montreal area, to play Blainville, and when they've really only been together for however many months and only so many games, right? I just thought it was such an interesting dynamic.
We will never have a Canadian Championship like this one because these teams are all established now. I think next year we're going to really start to see the expression of their individual talents, their individual like kind of formations and styles. And it's really going to be a battle for the North based on this is what I bring to the table and this is what I want to bring to the very end. And I would be hard-pressed to imagine another finale with two MLS teams in, let's say, the next 3 years. Like, I would say that a CPL team has the potential to make this final.
I think that will sort of depend on how the tournament shapes up in terms of what the format is. I think the champion coming in at the semifinal stage and the MLS teams coming in at the stage that they do, sort of, you know, Cavalry would have had to go through four or five rounds to reach a final, and that's really tricky.
And we don't know what the format's going to be, obviously. And that was something that came out, what, in like March of last year? So who knows? There might be a change that happens there.
And as the league expands and as more teams are, I know there's a league coming together in British Columbia as well. So the fact that all of these things are kind of coming together, this will not just be a 13-team tournament in the future either. This will expand to 16 or 24, or who knows how many. All that being said, though, I think the one thing about the format that I like is that it's a home and away knockout. And the fact that that's kind of consistent throughout is a really cool way of doing this, because you get to see all the grounds, you get to experience, everybody gets a taste of this tournament, even if it's just for one game. And the beauty of it is we're ending on a home and away between Montreal and Toronto. We're at BMO Field again for the second leg. But this isn't the only home and away thing that is really being considered, especially around this time as the CPL's fall season comes to its conclusion. Six more matches, roughly, for the two league leaders, Forge and Cavalry. And, you know, Marty, I guess you can kind of explain how this is all going to work, but Cavalry's already wrapped up the spring title. And as the fall sort of peters down, we're getting to that point where teams are being eliminated from contention. HFX eliminated earlier after this weekend's 0-0 draw with Valor. And Forge has now locked up second place in the cumulative table. Marty, can you kind of give us a little run through of how that happened?
Yeah, so this weekend we saw obviously HFX out of contention. So the cumulative table would come into play if Cavalry win the fall and the spring.
Yeah.
So you can't obviously have Cavalry play Cavalry. So it would be the second best team in the table, and that would be Forge. So now what we're looking at is these other teams. It's a long shot, I think. Personally, but if these other teams, in order to make the championship,
they'd have to win the fall. Basically.
They would have to win the fall title. So that's still York 9, Pacific, FC Edmonton, and Valor. Again, long shots. We also got the information on Monday, and the release came out about the finals being on October 26th and November 2nd.
Yep.
which is going to be interesting to see a game in Calgary on either one of those dates.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love a good orange ball session myself.
Mind you, Cavalry season started in snow. It should fittingly end in snow. And yeah, I bet if you're Tommy Wilden Jr., you're probably looking at the November 2nd date as like this would probably be your preference. I think he said he was indifferent, but, you know, I think everybody knows that there's a preference, even if it's not public.
I think you have to play it last, don't you? Your home game last?
I think so. I mean, that's kind of what we'll be examining as we run down this fall portion of the season. But if it were up to me, I would want to play second and do my away leg first. Yeah. But that being said, there is the Arsene Wenger school of thought, which is that if you play your home game first, you kind of give yourself a good foothold. And if you can prevent those away goals and you go into the second, really just needing to wrap things up, finish things off. Then there's the whole Barcelona versus PSG debate, which is like, well, how advantageous was it for Barcelona to have that home leg second when PSG comes to town? Or it really becomes a matter of like tournament management, which is something that a lot of coaches don't have to necessarily think about, because in a lot of leagues around the world, this isn't how things end.
Yeah.
But because of this unique format, Tommy Wilden Jr. or let's say Bobby Smyrniotis or any of the other head coaches do have to make this decision. And for my money, I would say that regardless of who's in that final, if it is presumptuous that it be Forge or if it is Cavalry, you really do want to end the inaugural CPL season at your home base too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a situation that, you know, when we look back at this league 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 50 years from now, these are going to be those iconic photos that everyone is looking at. And you want that to be your team lifting that cup in your stadium. And you want to be making that history on your patch. You know, a team will take a championship anywhere they can get it. But I think if you got guys candid, winning lifting a trophy on your home pitch in front of your fans is really what everyone dreams about when they're a kid. And
it's a no-brainer for me that you would want to do that. And I think also from the mental side, like, why wouldn't you want to have the idea of playing at home in a more comfortable setting, knowing exactly what you need to do? Like, yeah. I don't understand why you would want to play.
There is an old adage that while you can't win a tournament in the first leg, you can certainly lose it. And I think that will definitely play into it. Ultimately, the imagery of hosting a trophy high above your heads will be the case for one of our teams. Whether there will be snow or not remains to be seen, but I think even if there is, it's a pretty fitting way of ending
wiping the snow out of the cup or whatever it is.
Yeah, like, careful about the people very first, kissing it. You know.
Yeah. Bust out the hot chocolate. Yeah.
My personal highlight of the weekend, HFX nil, Valor nil.
What?
Now, doesn't sound like a very exciting game.
I love a good nil-nil.
It's a 0-0, Marty.
I believe the headline on campfield.ca said a gripping stalemate, which I thought was apt. Rob Gale, after the game, had some great comments here. Actually, I might just play them if you guys don't mind.
Sure.
Here now with Valor FC head coach Rob Gale. Coach Gale, able to do something your team hasn't been able to do all season, and that's get a point here at the Wanderers grounds. Your thoughts on today's result?
We deserve more.
Okay, you mentioned there were some controversial moments, one at least in the end of the first half.
What was that?
Player got taken down in the area there, and you were calling for a penalty. What did you see on that play?
Something the linesman didn't.
Okay, your team was able to keep your composure.
Yeah, a little short with one soccer.
You can tell he's
terse.
You can tell he's definitely frustrated, and probably fairly so.
So for context, it was Ali Moussi taken down in the box in a game that had, to me, very few clear-cut chances, and that was the difference for Valor. But it was interesting because Gale, later on, speaking to reporters, kind of hinted that, you know, potentially was the home crowd at Wanderers grounds that maybe affected the referee on that day. I'm not sure if you guys are buying that or not.
Let me just start out. It's been a while since we've heard a coach advocate for VAR to exist. Like, most of the talk has been about how nobody wants this system around, and it sounds like Rob wouldn't mind having
in the Premier League this or last weekend, there was like an offside call being debated that was the matter of like half of a centimeter. So there is a certain I do understand the argument a little bit, but to your credit, I think it's an interesting debate because I'll be honest, I thought refereeing was going to be a bigger kind of hot topic issue this season. I would say generally speaking, Canada Soccer's referees have been pretty solid throughout.
Yeah, I would say that too. Yeah,
they've been and very professional in the way that they've approached the matches. I know at the beginning of the season we said that there was going to be a little bit more physicality. I think we've seen a little bit more lenient in terms of some challenges, and it's been healthy to that extent. Mm-hmm. That being said, if you're Rob Gale, you're in a situation right now, those penalties that you're not afforded off of the back of some of those physical plays, you start racking up points in your head as to, you know, and a goal
where
here.
Would we
yeah,
be?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, he where said, we well, okay, so they had, it was funny later on in the interview, he like points behind the goal or behind him where the one goal is at Wanderers grounds. He said, what's happened right here, which, you know, a couple weeks ago they had in the game that Jordan Morrell was sent off in, later on in injury time, it was kind of buried, but like Michael Petras was taken
down.
Absolutely. And that definitely could have been a penalty. So they also had the game against Pacific in the first half. So I think that was maybe where the frustration was coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he said it could have been 6 points. If Valor's up 6 points, I don't know.
Look, it would be so easy for some, like, Rob Gale's a funny guy, and I think we've had our fun with Rob on this podcast with articles. It'd be really easy to point at this clip and be like, oh, look at him, he's just doing that. That would be a tremendous disservice to the genuine, I think, argument which Rob Gale makes, is that, you know, penalties shouldn't be, you shouldn't fear giving a penalty when there's a clear-cut penalty.
Yeah.
And while we don't have VAR, I think that there is certain grievances that they can take from, I think all coaches have them. But that being said, Valor has been given more penalties than any other team in the league.
And
they've
conceded
also conceded more. So it's just one of those circumstances where, you know, you get what you get, and, you know, you're allowed to feel, you know, upset. Yeah, you're allowed to feel upset,
yeah,
and you're allowed to air those frustrations. I don't think he said anything disrespectful, which is a credit to the man.
Yeah.
And ultimately, James, you're smiling right now, but
Rob knows, you know, how to toe the line. He knows how to tiptoe along what's okay and what's not okay.
It also made for, I mean, a very difficult interview. We should mention that was Alan April from One Soccer. But.
Yeah, I've never had to do sideline reporting, but I can't imagine that's got to be fun. I
broke out into cold sweats when that was happening. I mean, I was. We've all sort of been there, where you're expecting to get a nice 30-second answer out of somebody, and so you're getting yourself ready for the next question, and then they stop one word in, and you're sort of,
yeah, it throws you off your beat.
And you got to be quick when you're on TV like that, right? Those interviews are incredibly short.
And we're always trying to get rid of the ums and ahs and the little ticks that we have in our vocal things. So yeah.
Speaking of this kind of stuff, this is something that bugs me about TVs and movies. It has absolutely nothing to do with anything we're talking about, but like when the main character has to give a press conference and there's like 100 reporters and like just flashing lights, like this weird layer of like people who are not actually interested in doing anything but taking photos.
And everyone has like thick New York accents for some reason.
And they're all pointing their microphone in the face and yelling at the exact same time. Like, how is that logic? Like, I've been to over at least 100 press conferences or scrums in my life. Usually you just wait for like the senior guy to like ask the first question and then you just take a turn.
Or at least take your time take a turn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're pretty laid back up here though, so I wouldn't want to presume that's how it is all
I've
over
never
the
seen a scrum like that in my life.
I've gotten hit in the head with a camera once or twice, but I mean that's about it.
Yeah, but those camera guys, man. they jockey for position.
Yeah.
Jose Escalante's goal, is that the best one of the year?
No, not even close. But is a nice goal. The best goal of the year. Okay, the best goal of the year is either Cadel Thomas or Manny Aparicio, and I will live.
Yeah.
Although the Louis Belongoyer was good too.
I like that Maury Doner one.
The Maury Doner was good too.
Can we put Escalante in the top three? I want to put him in at least in the top three, maybe top five.
The only
we haven't seen a goal like that.
But the only reason it was that nice was because of the camera angle. If that camera angle is higher up, it just looks like a kind of a direct shot on net. Is just the fact that you caught it on the exact angle where that curve looks as good as it does.
Well, and it was also like the point of contact where it just went like just inside of the post, like didn't touch the post, but just got like a little bit of the net. Like,
yeah,
it's perfect.
Also, he was uncontested, so I feel like he had time.
And I don't know if you can give the third or fourth goal in a 4-1 win as the most important, you know, maybe like prettiest by a Honduran, sure, you know, break it down into categories like that. Then he's got it. He's won that one.
I don't know. It was pretty sick.
I enjoyed it.
We have had quite a few good goals. I would say some highlight reel worthy stuff. Some stuff has made it to Sports Center, which has been really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like, it was just another really good cavalry goal, another good little moment of individual brilliance by a player who I think has kind of gone under the radar in a sense. He's not a consistent starter. He kind of comes off the bench for cavalry as needed. He does start some games. But yeah, I mean, like, it was a nice goal.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely great for the replay. If you haven't watched it yet, please do visit campio.ca.
Yeah, it's worth
and
checking
check it out.
It's worth checking out.
Cavalry with, I don't know, to me that was maybe one of their better performances of the season. Pacific.
Of the fall, for sure, yeah.
I think they only managed the one shot on goal, which was the penalty.
This has happened so many times during the year where it's starting to get my head spinning. It's the second you have a team in a good little bit of form where you're thinking, you know, Pacific could make a play or Valor could make a play or Edmonton could make a play. It's like they meet Forge or Cavalry and those guys just pummel them to the ground. And yeah. It's like, don't even think about it.
Well, you and I were exchanging some texts about this. Like, when we look back at this season, however it ends up looking, however it ends up shaping up, we're going to be talking about how the top teams were able to find that consistency and not let a bad result pull them back. And like even Cavalry, they had that little bit of a spell where they picked up one or two wins in a 6 or 7 or 8 game sort of haul. And
yeah.
It's managing to find a way to be consistent and pick up results and pick up points, but also not to throw things away when you've got a good head of steam going. And just finding that consistency and finding some stability this year has been a real difference between sides.
So Jimmy Brennan says that next he's down this final stretch. I mean, his team is still in it, but he's also looking towards next year. And he's now commented and said that he's, you know, evaluating players for next year. Players are playing for their jobs. And I think a lot of that will happen as the transition occurs from this season to the beginning of next season. But I think a lot of consistency might be found in the teams that have kind of put together a good core of 15, 16 players, and they just want to add to that. I think next year we'll see a little bit less of this top heaviness. I certainly expect next year's spring, if there is a 10-match spring sprint, to be certainly much more tightly contested than this year's. It'll be fascinating to see just how these teams develop over the course of these next few months, what player acquisitions will take place. I mean, we still have a lot to look forward to.
Did we just start the first ever CPL offseason hot stove conversation? Is that what just happened?
Right? I think so. To be fair, it was waiting to be made, but yeah. Well, I talked to Dylan Sacramento from Valor FC this week too, and he mentioned how he's like, look, like in training, things are starting to pick up a little bit because, you know, nobody wants to be the team or, you know, whether you stay with Valor or not, you don't want to be the team that finished last.
Yep.
So whether, you know, you're maybe going to need to try to find a contract somewhere else or otherwise, you want to have a good performance. So everyone's kind of stepping it up. And he was kind of pointing to these next couple of games saying, you know, these are important for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're looking at teams like FC Edmonton, Jeff Paulus was pretty bold in his tactical shift, and you can tell he's looking forward to next year. Mm-hmm. He's trying things out. He's giving guys opportunities that they didn't necessarily have. Guys are playing for their contracts, and it's like that everywhere in the world. So this is not a uniquely Canadian thing at all. These guys are playing for their careers, and I think we'll start to see a lot of new faces down these final 6 matches as teams try to figure out what they're going to look like next year. So I'm going to put you guys on the spot here because this week is the finale of the Canadian Championship. I know you've got your questions, Marty, but we're going to go ahead and ax those for this week.
It's like I write questions for every time.
You do. I see them. They're right there on your notepad.
Like, okay, maybe next time.
Canadian Championship about to wrap up. We've had a lot of really fun moments. I thought it would be kind of interesting if we gave our own take on the idea of a Canadian champion. Beyond the soccer, let's look outside of the soccer a little bit. Who would you claim to be, or who would you like to see given the title of Canadian champion?
Or someone who deserves the distinction.
Are we talking about somebody who should be praised for what they have accomplished, or if we have to have some sort of a gladiatorial death match
like
between
if Canada
all countries,
had
this
to...
would be Canada's representative in that competition.
Oh, that would be sick.
Because yeah. that changes the answer.
That's true. Okay. Someone who's acknowledged.
Okay, so this is the person that if aliens, speaking of Area 51, you have to understand my thought process here.
Area
51, the raid happens. Let's say that the alien pods or whatever are accidentally opened and aliens get like a beacon. They land on Earth and they're like, send one representative. Send me your champion. And Canada has to elect somebody. Who would you elect as your Canadian champion? Someone to represent Canada for extraterrestrials who are friendly, we hope.
Well, I just got back on the ice this week, and that's curling ice, by the way.
Wow.
I love curling so much. I play all the time. Maybe I'll pick a curler. Kevin Cooey. Why not Kevin Cooey? First off, we all know who he is, for one.
Sure.
He's one of the top shot makers in Canada. You know, disappointing at the Olympics, but I think he deserves another chance. That's my like insider curling.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's.
I was gonna pick him, so I mean, I'm a little disappointed that you went.
Sorry, you're on your feet now.
Shout out to Edmonton on that one.
This is a tough one, man. Like, I don't know the
Calgary.
Emotional pick is sort of, you know, Terry Fox. He's sort of, I think he represents all the good values that Canada likes to think of itself as espousing. And, you know, when you're meeting aliens for the first time, you always want to put your best foot forward. So I think we
this
could
is
do
a
lot worse.
This
than
is
that.
A hyper realistic scenario. So yeah, that's know, yeah. I don't know how Terry Fox would would represent us from the grave, but
oh, I didn't know it had to be like a current thing.
Yeah, no,
like
sure. No, general, this yeah, this is all time. Happening in like the 80s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 80s. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, that yeah, makes sure, sense. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Spielberg was old. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's your Canadian champion, Armin? This is going to be interesting. It's going to be worse than mine.
No, it's not. There's one guy to represent.
You can't pick yourself either.
No, there was only one person in Canada who deserves to represent Canada, and that's Ryan Reynolds. Wow. I've never seen an eye roll that bad in my life. Okay.
Is he the guy from Twitter?
No, he's the guy from Deadpool.
Yeah. I was going to say as Deadpool or as himself.
I don't think there is a distinction.
That's fair, probably. Yeah.
Well, regardless of who we like to be our Canadian champions, we will crown a new Canadian champion.
Sorry, you don't want me to rip on Ryan Reynolds a little bit more?
Whatever. You know,
I don't know. I feel like, okay, I don't watch any of those movies, so I don't really like care. I'm too busy watching 10-end curling matches to care. But, I mean, what has Ryan Reynolds done movie-wise other than that? Wasn't he the Pikachu in the in
he
like
was
the
in
Pokemon
Detective
movie?
You say
Pikachu,
that like
yeah.
You say that like that's a bad thing.
Yeah, right.
He was Pikachu.
You like that movie?
Yeah, but also like he's very good looking, so there's that. I don't know. I'm just trying to put a good forward face for
of
Canada.
Course,
you
of
know?
Course. He does seem kind. He does yeah. seem kind.
He's got a good sense of humor too. I think that's something yeah. Canadians have prided themselves on.
Yeah. So. He's also a regular listener of the Center Circle Live podcast. So Ryan, if you're hearing this, thank you for listening. And thanks everybody for listening. We will have a Canadian champion crowned on Wednesday night, whether it's Toronto FC or Montreal Impact. So tune in for the conclusion of our Canadian championship, and we'll see you next week.